going to read you a poem. And one of my favorite quotes. A woman named Jane Hirschfield. I don't know if you've ever heard of Jane Hirschfield. She's a longtime Zen practitioner. If you ever saw, there's a movie that shows on PBS occasionally that is, I think it's called The Buddha. And it's got a lot of sort of animation and then talking heads and so on. And she's one of the narrators of it. She has a wonderful voice. And she lives in Muir Beach, which means she lives very close to Green Gulch Farm. If any of you ever been there in the early morning at Green Gulch, when it's foggy, everything sort of drips. The trees are just wet with the moisture from the fog, it's just the whole thing is dripping. I used to live in what was called a hiker's hut. It probably still is called the hiker's hut. I had a different dog at the time. And the hiker's hut is about, there's a guest parking lot and a rather long road. I guess it's about 100 yards or maybe more to where the Zendo is. And you pass above the kitchen and you pass a side road that goes off to the left towards where a bunch of people live. And above that side road, there's a little side road and it goes, it goes past the hiker's hut and on up to the hut up at the top of the mountain, if you've ever seen that. And the hiker's hut is basically two rooms separated by an outhouse that somehow doesn't smell bad at all. It's really amazing. I don't know what they do. Anyway, I lived there in one of those rooms partly because I had a dog. And she was not allowed in the main hall where all the monks lived and so on. So every morning, very early, I think we started at 5. At any rate, early, definitely still dark. I would walk from my place down to the Zendo. Through all these dripping trees, often. So this is the poem. Love amid the owl cries. It is not the altar that matters, not that, nor the shape that is found there. The ghostly ideas come and go one after another, but the place endures, the fact that there is a door. Love amid the owl cries. It is not the altar that matters, not that, nor the shape that is found there. The ghostly ideas come and go one after another, but the place endures, the fact that there is a door. On the big tall altar table in the library, there is a sort of a dark greenish thing that is shaped sort of like a bone, it's rubber, and an altar, but a book open. Would you get it? And often at night and in the morning, because it was still so dark, you would hear owls. So love amid the owl cries. So the poem doesn't mention love. The poem doesn't mention owls. But if you know Jane and you know where she lived and where she lives and where she practices, it's Green Gulch. I might have asked her. I don't remember, but I don't need to ask her. I do know her. And she's talking about an altar. But it's not the altar that matters. There's a huge altar. Has everybody been, have you been to Green Gulch there? Well, there's in the Zendo, which is also the ceremonial hall there, there is a very large altar and a very large Buddha. So not even that matters. And this Buddha is, you know, up high. It's impressive. So it's not the altar that matters, not that. Nor the shape that is found there. So not this Buddha statue. Maybe it's not even Buddha that matters. The ghostly ideas, come and go, one after the other. Think of all the years. It's been there since, I think, around 1970, Green Gulch, something like that. And every Sunday, there's a Dharma talk. And two or three times a year, there's a longer session, and then there's a Dharma talk every day. I think there are Wednesday night talks, but I think they're less formal. I don't think they're in Zendo, or at least they didn't used to be. I lived there in 94, 95, so it's been a long time. But there have been lots and lots and lots of Dharma talks in there. Ghostly ideas come and go. And we've been talking about how things, including mental objects, are without substance, that they're empty of own being. In that sense, they're ghostly. I think of ghosts as sort of ephemeral. Not so much like some of the ones in Ghostbusters, but slimy, foggy. But the ghostly ideas come and go. One person lectures and says that karma is something that is the result of actions you took in the past. Might even say from a past life. And then somebody else lectures and says, karma is the exercise of will, and it forms what's going on now. The results of it form what's coming to you now, but it's not necessarily yours. What's yours is how you respond to what's coming to you. And other people say other things. Who knows? Sometimes they have Tibetan Buddhist lectures. Sometimes they have lay people lecture. Sometimes they have Buddhist ecologist David Lloyd lectures. I'm sure that he lectures there from time to time. Thich Nhat Hanh has lectured there. And Vipassana teachers have lectured there. Ghostly ideas come and go. And one of the things that brings up for me is that notion that I say to you sometimes, and that it's important to not try to hold on to those ideas and fit them into something you already know about, but to let them wash through you and not worry so much about whether you understand it completely. Let it wash through you, let it settle in you and ferment inside you. Let it ripen inside you. That you can't grab a ghost. But the ideas come and go. So it's not that either. But the place endures. The fact that there is a door. These are really solid words, you know. The place that it endures. The fact that there is a door. So pulls a dogan and pulls it out, pulls the rug out from under you. And says, oh, it's just, who knows? And I say, she's not talking about attachment. She's not talking about making it solid, but she is saying there is, and I'm going to use another word, there is a foundation. There is a way, with a capital W, way. There is a Zendo, there is Zazen. And I was remembering this last night, that she said, that she had said there's a gate, but she didn't. She says there's a door. So a door and a gate. She maybe, I don't know if it occurred to her, to say gate would be a little cute, because gate is also the beginning of the mantra that ends the Heart Sutra, Gate, different pronunciation, Gate, Gate, Paragate, Parasamgate, Bodhisattva. She knows that. Whether she thought of it, I don't know. She probably did. She doesn't like the poems to be too accessible. The place endures, and the fact that there's a door. The place endures. The Zendo endures. Even if the Zendo were to burn down, or crumble to dust, it's an old barn that's been redone. It's pretty solid, actually. But it could, someday. At any rate, even if the Zendo were to disappear in some way, you can sit Zazen. You can make a Zendo anywhere. Right? Suzuki Roshi used to say, you should be able to sit Zazen in the middle of Times Square. So the place endures. The place is your cushion, is your seat. The fact that there's a door, there's a way, there's an entrance. An entrance is Zazen. And that way is a fact. Don't hold on to that any more than anything else. Don't make a thing of it, but Zazen. Pardon me, Zazen works. So love amid the owl cries. What's love got to do with him? zazen. We don't understand it. We just sit down and do it. It's beyond our brains. You may understand it in your gut, but not with words. The ideas come and go. But the zazen is available to us anytime. And love, compassion arises from zazen. It arises from sitting still and being quiet and allowing the myriad dharmas to come forth and experience themselves. The zazen naturally leads to compassion. It's a matter of willingness, it's a matter of being open, it's a matter of vow. The door is there, and you can. There's a lovely invitation to enter, to walk through that door, to say, okay, I will sit down and I will sit zazen. And thoughts, like those ghostly ideas, thoughts come and go. I'll just let them. I'll just sit still in the middle of it. And I will come to know, I'm telling you, you know this too, I think, I'll come to know that we're all connected. I'll come to know that my experience is not so different from other people's experience. It's one of the many reasons to really get to know, to study this self. Because when you study this self, yourself, you know me better. We think we're so different, we're not. Years ago, I was part of a group it was a week-long retreat at Green Gulch for lawyers to study how to be mediators. It was taught by a man named Gary Friedman. And I had been practicing. I was about to leave San Francisco Zen Center entirely. And I was thinking maybe I would support myself by doing mediation. And I studied it a little with him before because he taught some for the staff of Zen Center and so on. But this was a formal one for lawyers. And so, which he did it there like twice a year. And so I took his class or the retreat. And it was, he's very skilled. And it was clunky. You do an exercise and you pretend to be the mediator, or then you're in a, there were two, there was one domestic exercise and one contract one. And so in each one, you were either a party or the mediator, so that you got to be a party and a mediator in the two exercises. And you kept the same small group of three, you kept doing this for 4 or 5 days. So you'd present something and then you would do it. And then you'd come back together and there were probably 30 people there. And so everybody's sitting in a big circle and he's saying, how was that? Crickets, absolutely silent. And I would speak up sometimes, but I didn't want to be, I was there as a participant. I wasn't there as a leader or teacher or an expert or anything. So I didn't want to always be the one to say, well, this is what came up for me. I didn't want to be out in front too much. And we talked about it. And as you may know, every group has a kind of a personality in this group. And the personality was really reticent. And I suggested to him that he just ask the group what's holding you back. And he did. He didn't, I don't remember what words he used, but he did. And this very brave woman from San Jose raised her hand, and he called, and she said, "I'm afraid you'll see me for the fraud that I am." Mm-hmm. And you could feel it, just like you could feel it in the room. You know, there was that kind of murmuring of fellow feeling, and there was a kind of a relaxation that happened. Like, she's saying what I feel. And it got a little better. It didn't get that much better. So, oh well. But it was so instructive. You know, here are all these people. A lot of them have been lawyers for a long time, and they're skilled and been doing what they do. And yet they felt like a fraud, most of them. And to have her acknowledge it, I think she was brave. But, so knowing your own feelings of feeling like a fraud or your own variation on the theme, then you know mine. And out of that understanding of myself as a human being and you as a human being, that understanding that of connection, and also that I'm not so special. We can get kind of attached to our suffering. Like, nobody knows what I've been through. Yeah, well, maybe. Maybe worse. Love comes out of this. Compassion comes out of this. Amid the owl cry. Wonderful to sit in that zendo and hear the owls. And at night, in the summertime, you hear the frogs in the pond. So there's lots. And they all stop together. It's weird. And you don't, I never heard them start up, so I don't know that they start up together. I don't know. I kept saying I'm going to listen, but I never did. And maybe they just start up sort of on their own, but for some reason they stop together. But anyways, it is magical to sit there. And it's big place. And when I lived there, I don't think there were lights. Seems like there must have been lights. Are there lights, electric lights up in the ceiling? There must be.
Yeah, there are.
Yeah. But it was, you know, in the morning it would be pretty dark, and there would be a couple of kerosene lamps and a candle or two on the altar, and that might be about it. Or if the lights were on, they were extremely dim. And in the morning when you're sitting there, you know, there it's a very large space. But there could, you know, there might be 20, 25 people in there. It's not like on Sunday mornings, it's jammed. I don't know what it looks like now, but it used to be, it was just jammed. There were, on the platforms, there were, instead of one row of Zabatons, there were two. And then there were chairs set up, sort of, you know, like a theater or something, folding chairs. So, and they would all be full. And then a few people on the floor or in front of the chairs. It's more than 200 people, I'd say. I don't know exactly, but it's a lot. So on a weekday, there would be basically the residents and maybe a couple of people that came from your beach or whatever. So that lends the air of mystery to it, you know, because there's sort of dark corners. There's nobody there. So love amid the owl cries It's not the altar that matters, not that, nor the shape that's found there. The ghostly ideas come and go one after another, but the place endures, the fact that there is a door. So, what do you think?
It really touches me. It makes me feel like crying.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my husband and I got married there.
Oh.
Impromptu, without a permit.
Oh, outside, I presume.
Near there. And we just found wherever we could park and got off and did our vows there. And we go back every year and we do our vows, and it's different. And the nature, whatever is happening there, is different.
Mm-hmm.
And our vows mean more and more. And we notice something different, just like a poem.
That's wonderful.
And so it just meant a lot, that whole, your whole lecture. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Zach? Mm-hmm.
I love the idea that you can sit anywhere, even on Times Square. But last week I learned I got a lesson, I guess, that sitting with a Sangha is way better than sitting by yourself. And so I guess I would add that as an addendum to the poem. And maybe the Sangha is part of the ghosts, the other people there too. And so I look forward to being there next week.
Well, the Sangha might be part of the place.
Yes.
Steve? Yeah, that came up for me, not so much out of the poem, but out of your commentary on it, which is Zazen opens us up to love and compassion. Yes. Can we separate that? I looked at my own experience, and I've definitely, since practicing Zazen for whatever, 10 years or something, opened a lot. But I don't know if I can separate that from, I think without Zazen, I wouldn't have opened up. But I also think I've always needed the Sangha. I think I've always needed the teaching. When I started, I kind of didn't want the teaching. I just wanted to sit with people, and then I realized I needed the teaching. And I realized I needed the people. So, to me, it's all part of the place, and it's all part of the door.
Yeah, and you know, she's a scholar. She does translations. She quotes old Chinese guys, you name it. So she's not anti-thinking or anti-study. But this poem, I think, is about the Zazen and place. So I would go for a Sangha, but I'm not sure about the studying part. Not that we shouldn't, and not that it doesn't help, because it does. It supports our understanding and supports our Zazen. I mean, I just gave a lecture from a poem to encourage us to sit Zazen. That's all I ever do, in case you haven't noticed. Mel told me to talk about Zazen a lot. That's easy. Okay. Anybody else?
Briefly.
Kelly.
Yeah. Since you mentioned, I was thinking about group dynamics and like what causes a group to be lively and what causes a group to not, you know, want to say anything. And sometimes it can be the same group, but week to week.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it just makes me think about those times in here. I mean, we all know each other, some better than others, but we're all familiar with each other. And there's some weeks where we all jump in, like, da 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 da, and there's some weeks that we don't. And I don't believe it is the subject matter. I think there's just...
It's, who knows? I think all of the above. I mean, this poem, for me anyway, I have a similar response to Dana's, is that I'm very touched by it. I want to cry. I don't really want to talk about it. Mm-hmm. It seems so obvious. This is not the first time I've lectured about it. I was looking in there, and in the book that it's in, which is called The Lies of the Heart, I think. And I found something that I really liked, and I noticed what's called a book dart, a little like a fancy paperclip. And I opened it, and there was Love Amid the Outcries. I said, oh, old friend. Anyway, so it's not just each group, but each meaning, whatever. And partly, sometimes it's what I say, and sometimes it isn't. I mean, Gary is really, really good at it, and he teaches the Dharma, and a lot of the lawyers that I work with have taken that, not that when I was in, but taken that class, and I admire him tremendously, and he was baffled, because he doesn't usually have that experience, but who knows, I don't know. So anyway, let's stop, and bye.